in Zimbabwe is 17 hours 20 UTC, 7:20 p.m. in Zimbabwe on Saturday, March 14th, 2015. You are listening to Studio 7 live from the Voice of America in Washington. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Gibbs Dube. Here are our top stories this evening. Some victims of political violence in Zimbabwe say the alleged abduction of Occupy Africa Unity Square leader Itai Dzamara reminds them of a series of abductions since independence.
I thought this was it. I didn't think I was coming out, but I came out, and I believe Itai is going to come out and he's going to tell his story. So it's scary, yes, when you are there. You don't know where you are. You don't know what is happening.
Human rights activists say they are concerned about the fate of a Zimbabwean captured in a video that has gone viral on social media showing him being whipped by a group of policemen.
That is the most barbaric act that I have seen being captured on video. But I would quickly say maybe I'm not actually shocked. These are some of the things that we always say when we talk about police brutality.
And a councillor in the Midlands province is preparing to take the government to court over presidential input schemes.
There is the issue of distributing food and input schemes along political lines. Those things need to be verified by the court so that we identify and distinguish between state resources and ZANU-PF resources.
A victim of political violence in Zimbabwe says the alleged abduction of Occupy Africa Unity Square leader Itai Dzamara reminds them of a series of abductions since independence in 1980. Grace Kwinje, a founder member of the Movement for Democratic Change, who was attacked by state security agents in 2008, says Dzamara's abduction on Monday by unknown assailants is very worrying. She is among several opposition MTC activists who were abducted by suspected state security agents, beaten up and dumped at police stations. Some were later found dead and their assailants have not yet been identified. Others, like Patrick Nabanyana, who was an election agent of former Education and Sports Minister David Coltart, have not yet been found. Kwinje speaks to Studio 7 about Zamara's fate and what could be happening to him.
We were hoping that by this time things would have changed in our country, but it seems that they are not changing. And for me, really, in terms of the infighting within ZANU-PF, I was hoping that all the factions in ZANU-PF would be behaving better, would be more sensitive to the population that they are trying to war, to support them, to have confidence in them as leaders of the future. So this Itai Dzamara case for me really, it's sad, it's tragic, but it really shows you that for Zimbabweans, we are not yet there. We are not yet there.
So now, we know that at one stage you were really brutalized by the state machinery in Zimbabwe. So what does it remind you, this kind of, thing that is happening right now?
It's traumatic for me because, like, you know, it's 7 to 2 hours and they still haven't found Itai. And I went in the same situation together with others, like the MDC president, Morgan Tsvangirai, the former SG Tendai-Biti and many others, Mama Holland and so on. So for me, it's like a deja vu moment that, you know, we've been through this before. And we just think, okay, you know, the narrative right now is that there's a post-Mugabe momentum that is building up and that there are ZANU-PF reformists who are coming to take over. And we're just saying, okay, if the reformists, if those who are more sympathetic to our rights, to our freedoms, those who abhor this kind of thing going on are the ones who are taking over, then they should really be speaking more openly and be doing something. And Itai really is the test case for them.
Let's rewind a little bit, Ms. Kwinje. We still remember that you were in the hands of some state agents. So now, what was going through your mind when you were being tortured, you know, all those kind of things?
It was terrible. I gave my final prayer because I didn't think I would come out. I was scared, and God is faithful in my life, and many people don't really understand why I'm such a believer. But when, for instance, I was in Braeside Police Station, after they tortured me, there was a woman there who was praying for me. I was unconscious, but she was interceding for me, praying for me and saying, Lord, I don't know what has happened to this woman. I don't know what crime she has committed. I don't know who she is. I was in pain, and I thought these were my final moments. So it was like, you know, when Jesus was on the cross and was praying for those people, you know, the two people on his left and on his right saying, Father, forgive them. You know, that was my own moment where I thought this was it. I didn't think I was coming out, but I came out, and I believe Itai is going to come out and is going to tell his story. So it's scary, yes, when you are there. You don't know where you are. You don't know what is happening. But there's a divine being, and that is what connects us, and that is what connected me to my God, and to know that my God is more powerful than the most vicious elements that have been sent to kill me, to abduct me, or to do anything against me.
That was Grace Quinje, a founding member of the MTC, speaking with Studio 7 from Brussels, Belgium. Political analyst Shadrack Kuto of the University of South Africa says what is happening in Zimbabwe right now is not surprising.
This is a tragedy, of course, and one has to indicate that it's not the first time disappearances take place in Zimbabwe. We have had people disappearing. We have had people sometimes involved in accidents which are questionable, whether they were really accidents or staged operations of state security services. So it is something which ought to raise serious concern, but at the same time, not very surprising because, as I've already indicated, this has been a pattern in the administration led by President Gabriel Mugabe. But it is surprising at this moment because one would have thought that after going through a difficult period where Zimbabwe is trying to really rehabilitate itself and redeem itself, and this is occurring. So it is difficult to tell, but it is a question of factional differences that are within ZANU-PF, but at the same time, ZANU-PF broadly against the rest of any signs of opposition or openness in time of revealing what is going on in the country.
Looking at, you know, the abduction of Itai Dzamara, you know, having the president as the chairman of the AU and the SADC chair, is this a reflection of what Africa is all about?
It is not, but I believe that it will send contradictory messages. One is that other African countries will say, as long as you are the chair of the AU or chair of the SADC region, we don't want your country to show this kind because it reflects on Africa, or other people who don't understand Africa and how it operates will use it. And, you know, so we hope that this doesn't continue and ought to be corrected. So there's going to be pressure from other countries on the continent, not all of them, but at least some of them that have more muscle within the AU.
That was political analyst Shadrack Kuto of the University of South Africa, speaking with Studio 7 from Johannesburg, South Africa. Direct from Washington, the voice of America, VOA. Human rights activists say they are concerned about the fate of a Zimbabwean captured in a video that has gone viral on social media, showing him being whipped by a group of policemen. Lizwe Jamela, a member of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, says they are looking for the victim.
That is the most barbaric act that I have seen being captured on video. But I would quickly say maybe I'm not actually shocked. These are some of the things that we always say when you talk about police brutality, because that one was outright police brutality being captured on camera. And what is so disturbing is that actually the officers seem to be so amused by it, as if they're actually in a game of some sort when they're actually hitting up a human being, to an extent that the instruments of beating ended up actually being inadequate, while the person is actually yawning in pain.
We are told that human rights activists are actually investigating that issue. Tell us what is going on.
For a video of that nature, definitely it just went viral on the social media. But the source and the location is so difficult to locate. So we are calling upon anyone with the information or the person who could have originated that video to contact us or to come to our offices so that we can try to track the victim and see how best we can assist each other. Because even in the video, you can actually even hear some of the names of the officers being called out in amusement. You remember that other video that went viral where a woman was being abused by some commuter marshals and conductors and something like of that nature. Well, perpetrators ended up being brought to book because people were forthcoming with the information.
That was Lizwe Jamela, a member of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, speaking with Studio 7 from Harare. Police declined to comment. A councillor in the Midlands province is preparing to take the government to court over presidential agricultural inputs said to be distributed only to ZANU-PF supporters. Willard Moyo of Ward 29 East Lobela says villagers were recently denied the inputs in his ward by war veterans and suspected ZANU-PF supporters are taking the matter to court. Moyo explains the basis of the court case.
There is the issue of distributing food and input schemes along political lines. Those things need to be verified by the court so that we identify and distinguish between state resources and ZANU-PF resources. If President Mugabe is for ZANU-PF, then those people from the MDC, who are their president then? If Morgan Tsvangirai was allowed to rule, why then is he not allowed to look for the resources and for food for his perceived supporters? Now that Mugabe is the president of the Republic of Zimbabwe, he's no longer a president for the ZANU-PF people only. So the court should try to help.
So now, when are you taking this matter to court?
I went to the court last week and my legal team advised me so that I go back and look for the affidavits I will fill and make sure that I confirm with the electorate, the people who denied the access to the input scheme.
How many people are talking about here when you say they are being denied food by some suspected ZANU-PF followers?
In my ward, we have 1,200 home households. Right, then this input scheme, which is distributed to ZANU-PF, only caters for 120 to 200 households.
That was Councillor Willard Moyo of Ward 29 in Lobela, Midlands Province, speaking with Studio 7 from Tonsa Village. But ZANU-PF activist Morris Ngwenya says the villagers are making a wrong move.
That one belongs to the president and the first family. Through their friends, their well-wishers, they pull together resources and come up with inputs that they donate to especially the underprivileged in all the provinces of the country. That is how it is distributed. Therefore, for someone to take government to court, it's a nullity on its own. What kind of an underprivileged person would then rush to court to sue someone for not donating to them? I have never heard of that. So I think someone is trying to be mischievous and trying to tarnish the image of the presidential input scheme, really.
Now, the argument here is, you know, people were supposed to be given these agricultural inputs, but everything was taken over by some members of the ruling party. What do you think?
How do we ascertain that? It is very true that MDC people shun anything that is done by the president of this country. Even elections, they boycott. But in essence, it is meant for the underprivileged, regardless of party. So if there is anyone who has spent, I think they should go through the right channels of whoever was distributing those inputs and raise their queries. Otherwise, you know, so going to court, well, it's a waste of time and resources.
But this is not the first time, Mr. Ngwenya, that we are hearing this kind of issue, you know?
Well, in every society, you discover that there are those squabbles. People try to bring in politics even when it's not even necessary.
That was ZANU-PF activist and political commentator Morris Ngwenya speaking on Studio 7 from Harare. You are listening to Studio 7 live from the Voice of America in Washington. Now it's time for the Women's Forum.
Welcome to the Women's Forum, a forum where we look at issues affecting women. I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye. the Women's Forum. Today we have the founder of Sally Institute, Sally Lura, who is on a tour for 3 weeks here in the United States, which was organized by the American Embassy in Harare. Sally Lura will be visiting various institutions within the United States to find out ways in which they can share ideas on women's rights issues. Welcome to the Women's Forum, Sally. Tell us, why are you here in the United States? What is the purpose of your visit?
I am here for the International Visitors Leadership Program, sponsored by the U.S. Embassy, where they take a group of women from 9 countries from Africa to come and study the American system of governance and to see how other non-governmental organizations are working hard to advocate for women's rights issues and support women in leadership positions in all sectors.
From what you've learned, what has been the major highlight so far?
What has been interesting so far is that we got an orientation and an update of the structure of how the government of United States of America works. And what has been exciting is the separation and devolution of powers, where we have states that have their own structures of governance, that have their own policies, that have their own courts, their own judiciary systems, their own tax systems. So this was exciting because in most of our African countries, the state has too much ownership of the economy and it determines how the economy of the country runs. So here it was exciting to learn that various states have to determine how their economy works and how they will contribute to the federal government. So it was exciting to learn that, you know, we don't need to overburden the state by expecting them to provide for all our troubles, but they are country-specific and provincial-specific interests that are economic-based, that are revenue-based, where even in terms of the budget and how resources are allocated and utilized, we have that kind of a structure that is decentralized to local communities. It was also exciting to see how the Congress, their parliament, is very powerful in terms of even how it provides checks and balances for the executive. So for Zimbabwe, for example, we are excited with the new constitution. We still have expectations and we are a work in progress where we look forward to having a situation where provinces are in control of their natural resources. They determine what they can do with the revenue that comes from their natural resources, and within their own communities they can regulate and determine where the economy goes. So this has been very exciting, and also to learn about the Department of State Office of Global Women's Issues, how they are contributing into Africa, how they are committed to ensure that there is addressing of gender-based violence, increasing women's participation in leadership, empowering adolescent age group women so that they become leaders in the future, and also contributing increasingly to women's economic empowerment and girls' education.
And also, Sally, do you think what you are learning here you'll be able to implement in Zimbabwe, looking at how things are currently?
I feel very blessed being a citizen of Zimbabwe who, through the American Embassy, got this opportunity, because I am strategically positioned where I can interface with the youth movement, with the women's movement, with women in political leadership. So what I am learning here, I will share with all women in all sectors and all other sectors in the civic society, institutions, including policymakers within my community. So this will help us in a way where when I go back to Zimbabwe, I will share what I have learned, discuss any opportunities of how best we can utilize the knowledge that have been gained in our local communities.
Time is not on our side. Thank you very much, Sally Lura, the founder of Sally Institute, who is here on a visiting fellowship before returning to Zimbabwe, where she hopes to implement some of the programs that she's learned here in the United States. I'm Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye.
And now to recap today's top stories. Some victims of political violence in Zimbabwe say the alleged abduction of Occupy Africa Unity Square leader Itai Dzamara reminds them of a series of abductions since independence. And human rights activists say they are concerned about the fate of a Zimbabwean captured in a video that has gone viral on social media, showing him being whipped by a group of policemen. That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Chris Gandhi. This is Kip Stube in Washington, D.C., wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.